Srimad Bhagavad Gita, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 3, text number 21, is it? Those of you who know the verse can chant it after me. Yad yada charati shreshthas. Tat tad evetaro janaha. Sayat pramanam kurute. Dokas tad anuvartate. Yad yad acharati shreshthas. Tat tad evetaro janaha. Sayat pramanam kurute. Lokastad anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. What's that? Apane achare kare prabhu jibere shikai. It's about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It said that he... That's what Srila Prabhupada commonly quotes that. That by personally showing ideal behavior, prabhu, which is the usual term in Chaitanya Charitamrita for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taught others. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's also recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Apane na koile dharma shikhan na jai. If one doesn't personally perform dharma, then he can't teach it to others. That's also suggested in Jivan Sharta Kari Koropara Upaka. That you personally make your life successful and then you can do welfare for others. Janma Sartak Kari means the same thing. Janma is often used interchangeably with jiva to mean one's life. In your language also? The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. No, I'm missing. I'm missing some sentences. One who teaches in that way means by behaving properly and then teaching, is called acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures, like Manu Sanghita and similar others, is very interesting, seeing there's all this propaganda against Manu Sanghita within ISKCON. That Srila Prabhupada here, in this purport, when he's talking about the behavior of people, and Manu Smriti is specifically concerned with behavior, rules and regulations of human behavior, and Srila Prabhupada cites this, the revealed scriptures. He could have cited Bhagavatam, the Vedas, but he specifically cites here Manu Sanghita. The revealed scriptures, like Manu Sanghita and similar others, are considered the standard books to be followed by human society here. Because Manu Sanghita or Manu Smriti, as it may also be called, is specific purpose is to give rules and regulations conducting or governing the conduct of human society. It does have some philosophical statements also, but that's the main thrust of it. In fact, you'll find everything. Just like in Ayurveda, you'll also find all of them. You'll find some statement, Narayana is supreme, everywhere you'll find that. But in Ayurveda, obviously, we don't have Ayurveda, the original Ayurveda. We have only this Charak Sanhita and Sushruta. These two ancient works are there, which are derived from Ayurveda. But they also, they always, everywhere, it's always in every, even in the Upapuranas and everything, everywhere, Vishnu's supremacy is declared. And some, at least some philosophical statements will be there. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such standards, shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees, and that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. The king or the executive head of a state, the father and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. The general thrust of, at this point, of Krishna's presentation here in Bhagavad Gita is what in logic or rhetoric would be called an appeal to authority. Krishna is trying to convince Arjuna that it's Arjuna's duty to fight. I'm saying trying to convince. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do whatever he likes. But he gives the jiva minute independence. So Arjuna, at the end of it, he could say, the hell with you, I'm not going to fight. He didn't, but he was given that choice. So at this point, Krishna is appealing to authority. He's giving the example. You see great personalities like Janak. He also performed his duty. He was also a king, like Kshatriya, like you. He didn't say, well, there's too much trouble, and there's too much maya, I'm just going to go to the forest and meditate. He didn't say that. He performed his duties, and he was a great devotee. Next, Krishna will give the example of himself, that, well, you want to quit everything, I could too. But then the whole world would go to ruin. So in this way, he's convincing Arjuna, or as I say, trying to convince Arjuna. Arjuna is a great man, there's no doubt about it. I mean, really great. So much so that even now he's famous in human society. Any famous person at the present time, present in this world, I don't think after 5,000 years they'll be known. Prabhupada should be known. Others, I don't know. Unlikely and unnecessary. I mean, they're not even worth knowing now, what to speak of in 5,000 years. But Arjuna was truly a great person. There's no doubt about it. In the history of the world, you don't find two Arjunas. He's unique. What is that? Na bhutva na bhavishyati. Never in the past and never in the future. Was there someone like him, and never in the future will there be anyone exactly like him. Of course, that's true of everyone. Even every ant is unique. But Arjuna is certainly unique for his chivalry, his valor, his ability in fighting. his achievements. He's a great person. Even now, if the chief ministeress of Tamil Nadu comes to Vellore and parades in the street, she'd have to be behind a glass. What is that? Bulletproof glass. Nowadays, if leaders come in the public, they have to go in a cage, practically. They're prisoners because of security arrangements. But so many people would come to see her. So Arjuna was such a person. That people, oh, if Arjuna is coming, then people would want to see him. And they would think their life is blessed by having a moment's darshan of Arjuna. So he's a great person. And Krishna is giving the understanding that with greatness and name and fame and all this, which Arjuna certainly has, comes responsibility, because people tend to try to emulate you, to follow your example. So, in another way, if you become great, you lose your freedom. You don't have the freedom to do what you like. That's one reason a great person in Vedic culture becomes great, because they're self-controlled. We find in Vedic culture that the kings and the military leaders, they're not so important. Arjuna is, because he's a great devotee. But in the Western history, you hear about the great political leaders and military leaders, but in India, the people who are most remembered from the past are the great spiritual leaders. Someone's the king for some time, no one takes that. It's not. Even people didn't care who was their king. I mean, they'd offer him all respect, but there's one king and then someone else comes, and it's considered part of the natural order. There's a king. So in modern Hindutvavadi historians, they refer to Rajputs like Man Singh, who is a great devotee, built the Govinda temple in Vrindavan. They refer to him as a traitor, because he was commander in chief of Akbar, who was a Muslim. He was cooperating with the invaders, but that consciousness wasn't there. There was no such thing as national consciousness at the time. The idea was whoever's the most powerful, he's fit to be the king. That's better. If someone more powerful, because he's in a better position to protect the citizens. And that's that Kshatriya dharma, that some weak person, he's not fit to be the king anyway. The strongest person should be the king. So it was just a matter of the dharma of other citizens, that whoever's the king, you offer them all respect. But it was the spiritual leaders, the people who gave the direction of how to come out of this Maya Sangsara, this world of birth and death and illusion. They are considered the really great persons in Vedic culture, although they wielded no political power whatsoever in most cases. There were some, like that Narahari Tirtha was in Madhva Sampradaya, in our Sampradaya, he was a king for a long time. There are many. Kulashekhar Alvar also, he was a king. But then when he became Krishna conscious, he forgot all about his kingdom. Yamuna, he was also a king for some time. So the really great persons are those who are self-controlled. Whereas generally the kings, they're self-controlled to a large extent, but very ambitious also. It's good to have a pious king. It really makes a lot of difference if you have a pious king or an impious king. So Krishna's telling Arjuna that, you see, you may think you're going to just quit the battle, but then everyone else will think, well, you know, why should I bother doing my duty? If a great person like Arjuna, he doesn't do his duty, then why am I bound to do mine? It becomes a bad example. People protest that Lord Rama sent Sita Devi away after bringing her back from Lanka, but he heard this low-class person criticize him for keeping her, and he thought, oh, no. People are not understanding, even though after the Lanka war, Rama subjected Sita to the Agni Pariksha. You enter the fire. She said, I'll enter the fire to show my purity. He said, okay, go ahead. So that's a pretty severe test, isn't it? I mean, if you can get through that, then you're fit to be Sita. The very paragon of chastity. But still, it was misunderstood. So he thought, for the benefit of the citizens, not just now, but for all generations in future, I can't keep my wife here, because otherwise that will be cited as a bad example. Not that Ram was doing anything wrong, but it was misunderstood. So as not to be misunderstood, he banished Sita. Now you may say, well, this Krishna, he's talking all these things. What about him? He's not a good example. Ram went to kill Ravana because Ravana had taken his wife, and Krishna took everyone in Vrindavan, all their wives, all the young people. And what kind of example is he? Well, therefore, these topics of Krishna, they have to be discussed very carefully, with a lot of clear understanding. First, don't come to Rasalila first. First, Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Yujanati Tattvatahas, Prabhupada used to say. Those who know according to Tattva, those who understand according to philosophical principles, those who understand that Krishna's appearance and activities are transcendental, then gradually we can discuss these subject matters. Krishna's pastimes, they're not supposed to be imitated. If we follow Rama Bhagavan, he is Maryada Purushottam. He's known as the Supreme Lord who established the principles of proper human behavior. What are the limits for humans? Maryada literally means limit. It's usually translated as etiquette. There are limits of what we can do and what we cannot do. But for Krishna, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all respects. And he demonstrates the pastimes of the unlimited. There's no limits for him. So he's Lila Purushottam. Lila is beyond the bounds of this world. Krishna Lila, especially. He doesn't have to follow. He demonstrates what it means to be God. There's no rules and regulations for him. And there are so many points to understand how the gopis, they're not, actually, no, not only the gopis, no one else is anyone else's wife. That's all an illusion. Everyone's a servant of Krishna. So there's no, it was the husbands of the gopis who were thinking that this is my wife. They were wrong. Krishna was right to take their wives. Not you or me, or anyone else except Krishna. They shouldn't do any such thing. So Krishna's position is different. This should be understood. So anyway, this point is being stressed. A leader has to act properly. And the more prominent you become, in Vedic culture, you become prominent by your good character. But as you become more noticed, then it becomes more incumbent upon you to have that. If you're not well known, then maybe you, some brahmana can go out the back and smoke a bidi or something and get away with it. But then if you're a famous pundit and guru, the small-time brahmin shouldn't do it either. But the one who's highly respected, then sannyasira alpa chidra sarva loke gai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. That even the small hole, chidra means hole, literally, it means a small defect or small lacking or departure from the proper standard of a sannyasi, who's supposed to be the guru of everyone, even a small departure from the proper standard, everyone will announce it. It'll be broadcast everywhere. So he has to be very conscious of what that he's being seen and observed, not just seen, but observed. And people are happy to respect him because of his high standard of moral behavior. But then if he departs from that, then people become disgusted. About 20 years ago in Dwarka, there was once, maybe a little less, Swami Keshavananda, who was highly respected. He had a home for orphaned girls, and you can imagine what was going on. He was regularly doing things with the girls which he shouldn't be doing. It came to be found out. And the same Swami who had been so much respected, when it came to be known what he was actually doing, then the people dragged him in the streets naked and beat him. The same people who respected him so much. So it's a great duty of those who are respected as great for their character to uphold that. And in doing so, they become the leaders, but it's not even that they have to be appointed with a rubber stamp. But people naturally look up to them. And most of the sadhus in India, in the history of India, it's not that they're great because they had such and such a position, but because of their actual behavior. Just like to give a local example, the present Shankaracharya of Kanchi, he's not nearly as respected as the previous one. What do you think? But it's the same position in the same mud, but the previous one was much more respected because, I don't speak badly of the present one, but the previous one was clearly very saintly by his behavior. I mean, he was like as far as Shankaracharyas go, he was perfect. But I mean, he was very saintly, very renounced, very dedicated, and very austere, and completely what a Shankaracharya should be. And the present one, well, it's a difficult act to follow, you could say. Just like for gurus in ISKCON today, if people expect to be like Prabhupada, it's unrealistic because, you don't get devotees like Prabhupada just popping out of the coconut trees every 2 or 3 days. So he had the position, but he was exceptional. And then others, like here in Tamil Nadu also, not far from here also, Ramana Maharshi, he never had an institution, never sought name or fame, he never sought anything, but he became famous just because he was self-realized in some ways. Brahman realized, you could say. Although Prabhupada didn't appreciate him because some of the things he's... Well, particularly Prabhupada quotes one statement. One statement of his is that man minus desire equals God. Yeah, typical Mayavadi. But he was a sadhu, and an exceptional sadhu. And he didn't announce himself, he didn't hardly speak at all, ever. But he didn't make any aim to become popular or any such thing, but because he was exceptional. So I'm just giving an example. There are others also. Madhavendra Puri, let's to make a more gory example. He was just a wandering sadhu, the kind of person, the kind of sadhu who atheistically inclined people would just think he's just a useless beggar, wandering here and there with nothing to do. Actually, he wasn't a beggar because he followed ajachakabritti. He never asked anyone for anything. But like that, he wasn't preaching, he wasn't involved with anyone, he didn't involve with anyone even to ask for even a little milk to drink. But Krishna revealed his greatness by sending him to, well, by first of all, by revealing himself, Krishna, through Madhavendra Puri and having him, and they said, now you worship me. And then, so he became the head of the spiritual leader of the whole area because he was worshipping Gopal. And then again, when he went to Puri, his greatness went ahead of him. So he didn't want to be known as great, but Krishna revealed that anyway. He didn't have a publicity agency going around making up stories and circulating them on the internet. Stories of, he didn't have a myth-making machine. So, great responsibility of leaders. Srila Prabhupada was very interested in leaders as a strategy. Srila Prabhupada wanted to preach Krishna. He wanted that every living being in the universe should be benefited by Krishna consciousness. That, when you say in the universe, that means we have to start with the human society. And in the human society, the leaders, as Srila Prabhupada wrote in the purport to that Tadbhag Visargo verse, he wrote that the common people, they're like pawns in the hands of the leaders. They just tend to follow. Even in countries where they talk about the freedom of the individual. In America, they make such a big thing out of freedom. But everyone's brainwashed by the mass media and everything else. So Srila Prabhupada, if we examine his writings and his tactics in the early part of his preaching career. Of course, he was preaching most of his life, Krishna conscious, but really after he retired from family life, then he didn't. That was the complete focus. He didn't have anything else, any other activities. So we see he was targeting especially the leaders of society with the idea that if they take it up, then others will follow. And as far as leaders were concerned, Srila Prabhupada, he saw political leaders, and also even more, he would try to see the intellectual leaders. Well, especially when he went to America, he liked to meet with professors and scholars like this, with the idea that they're very influential. That was his idea. You can see from the purports that he wrote in the first canto that he was aiming at the leaders of society. But what he actually found is that the opposite. The people who were rejected from society, and they themselves had rejected society, mainstream society, they took an interest in Krishna consciousness. The hippies, most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, came from a hippie background. So Srila Prabhupada, he rode the wave. There's a saying in the surfing community. If you have a good wave that comes, you ride it. So he went, those are the people that coming, so he worked with them. The people who he wanted, it seems he expected that if he made a rational presentation of Krishna consciousness, that people would take it up, but they weren't, the hippies. So he went along with that. But then Srila Prabhupada's plan was to train up a new generation of leaders, brahmanas, spiritual leaders. So again, Srila Prabhupada's interest in leaders. I mean, I am generalizing here. It's not exactly in categorically that Prabhupada, he never wanted to train brahmanas previously, or that he ever stopped trying to meet the leaders, but there was a shift in emphasis. And so Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to train leaders. The people who are coming to him, he wanted to train them as brahmanas, although he did sometimes quote the Bengali saying that koila dhuleyo moila jabena, which means you can wash coal as much as you like, but it'll never stop being dirty. Do you have a saying like that? It's koila, so it's a fairly modern one, because coal, that wasn't used in Vedic culture. So you say something like in Hindi? Yeah, that's also there in Bengali. Kokore lees to sojo hobina. You can't make a dog's tail straight. So he would quote that sometimes. And for that purpose, he wanted to establish Gurukul. It was very clear his ideas that he wanted to train brahmanas and a new generation of leaders. There was a saying, we often used to hear that Prabhupada had said that the children of his disciples' children, they would be such powerful brahmanas that they could ignite the sacrificial fire by mantra. Apparently, Prabhupada said that. It used to be a well-known saying in our society. So Srila Prabhupada had that hope. And for that purpose, along with mass preaching by book distribution anywhere and everywhere to whoever would take the books, and along with prasadam distribution and festivals like Rath Yatra and other festivals, Srila Prabhupada, he enjoined his disciples to preach in colleges. This is in the West mostly, with the idea that if the intelligent class of people take up Krishna consciousness, then they can become leaders. Of course, anyone can become Krishna conscious. But if someone has some worldly ability, or in this life they have some more intelligence and education, then they could be better candidates to be trained as leaders. And Srila Prabhupada, he also said that if we simply go on expanding but we don't have competent leaders, then what did he say exactly? Then it'll just be a mess. I can't remember exactly what he said. There's one letter in that regard. So he was concerned about that we need people who can be leaders, which does suggest that even the mundane education, even though it's demoniac, and although Srila Prabhupada often said that the schools and colleges in America, they're producing hippies, not civilized, advanced people, but even that education can give some training, at least in getting the neurons in the brain working for more than just buying a packet of learning how to light a cigarette and smoke it. I mean, some thinking is required, some memorizing. Actually, a lot of it, it's memorizing, isn't it? But different disciplines, they require more actual brain power. Mathematics definitely requires use of the brain. And engineering, like that, you have to think a bit. It's not just a matter of cramming information. You have to be able to apply the knowledge to whatever you learn about engineering. When you go outside, you won't find any textbook situation. Every situation will be different. Like you have to build a bridge, and then you won't find any situation in which it exactly fits the textbook. The earth on both sides, it can be variable. It can be solid rock, or it can be loose soil, or whatever. There may be so many variables. So, again, the emphasis on leaders, that there should be good leaders. And Srila Prabhupada, he thought that if our devotees, they're actually on the standard of sadhus, that in course of time, people will notice that. Even book distribution, he said, especially wanted book distribution into more intelligent class also. Everywhere it should be, but... And actually, a lot of the book distribution in America at that time is done in the airports. And at that time, it was mostly business people and more money people who would be in the airports. So they were tough customers, because business people, they don't give away their money very easily, and they're usually hard, somewhat hard-headed and not very interested in religion, and especially not something like what they might consider to be some hippie-like religion. But somehow, by Krishna's mercy, devotees were able to distribute many books in the airports in America. And now in America, most of the book distribution is to young college students. And the reason is the devotees go to the colleges and to the concerts where the college kids goes, because they're the ones who they'll take the books most easily. Plus the airports are closed, which forces the devotees out. So this emphasis on leaders and how we being now part of Srila Prabhupada's mission to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings all over the world, especially those who are in that way capable of being leaders, then we have to consider this grave responsibility. Not everyone has that propensity or ability. Of course, another major part of Srila Prabhupada's mission is establishment of Varnashram, which takes into account that not everyone is likely to be, even those who come to Krishna consciousness, not everyone is likely to be fully dedicated in all respects, and people are at different levels. Not everyone's going to be very philosophically inclined how to engage everyone. And even people who are not much interested in Krishna consciousness, but there may be many people who they just want to do some work and get some food. And we can, if we engage even such people and we ourselves have our spiritual principles strong, then they can be engaged on the farms. And gradually, of course, they have to follow some rules, but gradually they can... But by working for Krishna and by associating with devotees, they can also become purified. But in Varnashram also, the head of society has to be in order first. Srila Prabhupada often gives that example. The Brahmins, if there's no proper leadership, if the Brahmins, if they're all messed up, then the whole society is messed up. If the Kshatriyas are messed up also, there's that Raja Nashta, Praja Nashta. You say they have that saying here? I say, yeah, I have that in Bengal. There's a Chanakya shlokas to that. The same idea. If the king's spoiled, then the whole everyone is spoiled. Everything becomes spoiled. So that consideration, our idea of leadership, we're not going to learn about leadership from these, popular culture, New Age, all these books about how to be a great leader, Stephen Covey and One Minute Manager and all this kind of thing. It's not about how to psychologically manipulate people. We can learn it's funny, everything nowadays you're supposed to learn it from a book, but things like leadership or anything is, the teaching has never been primary, in Vedic culture, or actually in all cultures around the world, teaching has never primarily been from books. It's person to person. And leadership, you can read so many books, but it's by personal example, you'll see. There's so many books and they have leadership seminars, they're trying to make donkeys into horses, it doesn't work. If you don't have the basic propensity, then you're not going to be a leader. That's why the Kshatriya class, they're very concerned to maintain the Kshatriya class. When Parikshit was born, Yudhishthira and the other Pandavas, they were very concerned by astrological analysis. Is this child going to maintain the tradition as his forefathers have? They're very concerned about that because there's no guarantee. Especially they were concerned with him because he was the last hope of the dynasty. After everyone else in the dynasty had been slaughtered, and the Pandavas, they were old men. I mean, they were still capable of having children, but they didn't want to get into all that again. So all their hopes were pinned on Parikshit, and they were happy to know from the astrologers that indeed he would be. Arjuna's, one of the main arguments that he gave for not fighting, actually it wasn't a very good argument that he wouldn't fight, he'd have to convince everyone not to fight, but he said that if everyone's killed, there'll be Varnasankara. So what was his plan, to try and stop everyone from fighting? Well, Krishna had already tried that, and that didn't work. So the idea that if the women are unprotected, then they'll be taken advantage of, and then children will be born without the Garbhadhan Sanskar. And Garbhadhan Sanskar, even to perform that, it's not just a one-time ceremony, but even to have that, you have to have the whole culture of having it. Other people nowadays, they never heard of Garbhadhan Sanskar. People have that because they know the importance of Vedic family planning, that we have to perform all these rituals. It's not just that one time they do a ritual, but they're doing rituals every day to make the consciousness, to keep the consciousness, at least in dharmic consciousness, if not in transcendental consciousness, at least in dharmic consciousness. So the whole culture was there. But if that's broken down, then you get welcome to the year 2013. It's a complete breakdown everywhere of the culture. And persons of my age of living in India, I've seen the culture just, it's almost daily. Tatas chanu dinam dharma satyam socham shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantyayo balang smritihi. practically day by day, you can see the culture breaking down in India and even in the West. You may think, well, the West is already so bad, but it actually used to be better. It's got worse. And there was a time when it was better. And I remember as a kid hearing the older people say, you know, how can it get so much bad and worse, but they couldn't imagine what it's like now. When they thought it was terrible when I was a kid in the 1960s, but it's, and what happened, the teenagers who are making it terrible, they're now their grandparents. So, you know, they all had free sex, and then their children are now, marriage, and as Prabhupada, and marriage is practically a dream in humans. It's so degraded. So what happened? I mean, the leaders of society, yeah, the hippies of the 60s are the leaders of the world nowadays. That's what's, it may not be the political leaders, but in America at least, the college professors, and the people go on TV channels and advise you this and that. So they've made this whole idea, everyone should have lots of freedom to do whatever you like. And they think that's a virtue. The more society allows you to be like an animal, it means an animal has no rules and regulations. That's the best society. That's their understanding. That you can freely indulge. You can have sex with anything that moves as long as it's over a certain age. But you're not supposed to have. They still don't like sex with children. They still. But, you know, just completely degraded. And they're the leaders. And then people follow. They think, oh, well, that's good. And like in India, people think, well, in the West, they do like that, so let's do it here also. It's andha yatha andhaya rupa niyamanas, the blind following the blind. And practically it's a qualification, the more degraded you are, that's considered the better. Like if you have no, just like if you go to join an IT company in Bangalore, if you join VIT here in Vellore, then they have to train you to be degraded, and then you're qualified for the job or to be in the college. And you come from the village where still there's so much conservatism, and then you come to Bangalore or to VIT, and then what's wrong with you? Why do you not have a girlfriend? And they put pressure on you to be degraded. And then you think, oh, this is the best. Shrishta. So everyone should do it. And they ridicule someone who has any principles. And that's the whole atmosphere in human society. And it's very difficult if someone actually wants to lead by following principles and say we want to follow the principles, because any slight thing they do wrong, everyone will notice. But for the liberal leader, he doesn't have any principles to follow, so he can't break them. And so there's no, you can't fault him for being unprincipled, because that is his principle, to be unprincipled. And it's very difficult to be fully, I mean, even if you want to be principled, it's difficult because you're in an atmosphere which is full of pornography and illicit sex, and the principled person might, just like in America, there have been several cases of famous Christian preachers who fell down into illicit sex. And you may say, well, they were just hypocrites. Well, maybe they weren't. Maybe they become rejected. Maybe they weren't hypocrites. Maybe they believed in that, but they became victimized by the modern situation. There's, because men and women mix freely and the whole atmosphere is saturated with sexual vibrations, sensuous vibrations, and they don't know any principle. They don't know how to follow the principles of brahmacharya. They're eating meat, and so. And then people say, you see, well, you know, you're talking, you don't even follow it yourself. So why not just all be honest and forget all this business of trying to be principled, and, you know, we're just animals, just live like an animal. They may not say it like that, but that's what it comes down to. That just Freud, of course, the great Sigmund Freud, and a great man of the modern age. He said this is all the problems you have in human society is because individual problems, psychological problems, because you're trying to suppress all these natural urges. And so we should just indulge in it. Great man. People, they great in the sense that his influence has been tremendous in human society, in modern society. I've said this several times. I was once in a bookstore in London in which they had one whole room dedicated for 1 month. They have special features, books on special subjects. So for 1 month they had one room full of books, hundreds of different books on sale on Freud and Freudian philosophy. So one of the posters they made said that even though all his theories have been shown to be wrong, still his influence is very great. But Prabhupada said actually he's right in saying that the whole human society is running on sexual attraction, but his conclusion is wrong. Therefore one should rise above this. But Freud's conclusion is therefore one should surrender to it, become a slave of your senses. He doesn't use that terminology, but that's what it amounts to. So it is much easier to go with the flow, to ride the wave of, or to go with the flow that's going to hell. It's much easier to just go along with everyone else. And if you say no, we don't follow this. We want to control our senses. We want to surrender to Krishna. Well, because the leaders are training people in a different way, then most people will reject you and think, "Oh, this is." They'll actually think it's something very wrong. Why are you denying your children to watch television? They're given the idea that children from the beginning of life, they should be indulged in sense, given sense indulgence as much as possible. But Vedic brahmacharya is something complete. No, they should be restrained from that so they can learn to control their senses so that they become free. You think they're free to indulge their senses means they become slaves of their senses. But if they're trained, no, don't indulge your senses. Then they can conquer their senses. And then they rise above that. And then you can actually begin to think. People in the modern age, for all their so-called philosophy and theories and millions of different theories about everything, they can't think clearly at all because their aim of life is sense gratification. They have no clear understanding of even the most basic principles of spiritual understanding. Even if by their own observation they come to certain conclusions which are correct, just like this world is full of suffering, but they can't find any solution to get out of that. They can't understand we're not the body. Very basic things. Easy things to understand. They can't understand because their whole aim of life is sense gratification. So it's a great task to change that. We're going to have leaders. If any organization can do it, it's ISKCON. But the leaders are going to have to be committed both in their own behavior and in their principles, in the philosophy. Committed means no sense gratification. You can't be a spiritual leader and be a sense gratification. You can't be a bhogi and a yogi. I mean, even a karma yogi, he's not a bhogi. You cannot be, even at the lowest level of yoga, you cannot be a bhogi. You cannot be have the attitude of wanting to enjoy this material world. And for one who's supposed to be a representative of the pure Gaurīya Sampradaya, in which sense gratification is just so far away from our aim. It's just so insignificant to indulge in sense gratification, even subtly, or even to acquiesce with that, to have any attraction to the pettiness of this material world. And as modern society, it's not just petty, it's so degraded. Then you can't be a spiritual leader. Spiritual leader, again, you can be appointed as a GBC guru, sannyasi, but a spiritual leader is one who takes the leadership, one who follows and preaches. Actually, everyone who's brahminically initiated, they're supposed to be a spiritual leader, at least by their behavior, that others can see, oh, this person is quite different from everyone else. You can see that by their behavior. They're not engaging in sense gratification. We're not interested in discussing sports or watching TV or having fashion shows or any such thing. We live in 24 hours engaged in Krishna service. So we really need spiritual leaders. We have to train up children, train up especially younger people who come, they can be trained better. Once in London, when a visitor asked Srila Prabhupada, why is it only young people here? At that time, Ambum was mostly all young people. Srila Prabhupada answered by posing a counter question, why are there young people in the universities? The person said, well, that's the age for education. Prabhupada said, that's right. It's the age for education. They've come here for spiritual education. So actually our movement is meant for, especially the centers, they're meant for spiritual education. That means educating the public and educating the members. By education, by practice, and by precept. Precept means by teaching. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Why young people are coming to ISKCON especially? Someone asked the Tamil BTG. Actually, you'll find in all of India, many young people are attracted to this Sri Sri fellow, isn't it? He aims at the young educated youth. In Bangalore, there's another guy. He's a disciple of Chinmayananda. His name's Dharma, Swami Dharma something or other. He's specifically aimed. He's dressed as a Swami, but it's just all about, his courses are about corporate leadership. And you know who I'm talking about? Maybe he's not that well known. I shouldn't advertise him. Maybe. I can't remember exactly. Yeah, must be, yeah. It's nice that people have such a good opinion of us. I remember Sridhar Swami, who probably most of you never saw him. He passed away. How many years ago? About 8 years ago? Something like 2004. So it's coming on 9 years now. One of his sayings was that people are very impressed when they see our temples, everything, and they start coming, and then when they see closer, they go away again. So it shouldn't be like that. It may be, I mean, in any institution, especially in Kali Yuga, you can expect all kinds of difficulties, even one which is promoting the highest good. Even if all the members are very sincere, there'll still be differences of opinion and this and that. But it shouldn't be that when people come that they get turned off by seeing the wrong behavior and attitudes of the people who they think are very spiritual and saintly. That's another. Yeah. Yatha Raja Tatha Praja. Yatha Guru Tatha Shisha. We hope. Yatha Pita Tatha Putra. They're common sayings.
So Krishna convinced him and then he made Vishwakarma to the temple. But the present situation is like now we are in Varnashram Dharma has been.
Now Varnashram Dharma has collapsed and all everything else. The only Dharma that's going on now is Kaitava Dharma. That's all. And Sankirtan Dharma. Little bit of Sankirtan Dharma, which counts for a lot, and a lot of Kaitav Dharma, and a lot of Adharma.
This is true with Arjuna. Not Arjuna predicted it and became true.
Arjuna predicted and it became true. Yeah, that's a fact. So what, was Krishna wrong?
Krishna tried to...
Yeah, even if Krishna had said, actually Arjuna, you're right. So we'll just not fight and let Duryodhana rule. Then it would have been the same thing. There would have been adharma. That was the whole reason the fight was there. And of course Krishna says, Tadatman, what is that? Sambhavami yuge yuge. It comes in every age because he establishes and then again it becomes disestablished. That's sakale neha mahata, by the mighty influence of time. In this material world, everything that's good becomes degraded. So then, therefore, Krishna comes again and again. He sends his representatives again and again. No, I didn't say we can't train leaders, but I said that you can't train people who don't have some propensity like that. Yeah. Just like Prabhupada said that they're sending Shudras to fight in Vietnam, therefore they're not Kshatriya class of people, therefore they don't want to go and fight.
Still we are encouraged to take
up. We're encouraged to do the needful, yeah. Ultimately, water finds its own level. We're all from Shudra background, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. We're all trained in a society which trains people to be Shudras. So, leadership is, we have to try and do it. It's also very difficult to do because people in the modern age have no idea what it means to follow. Their only models of leadership are demons and exploitive people and egoistic people. These are the only models. Cheaters who show themselves to be benefactors of mankind but who are actually the worst people. So then we have to look to Shastra. Then you get the new thing is people who are very rich, you should encourage them to be philanthropists. Like Bill Gates is supposed to be a philanthropist. But their whole idea of philanthropy is improving the mundane situation of the people in the world according to their ideas. So one of the main ones is promoting birth control and all. So they have no idea what it means to help or even materially how to help them. So to tell people that, well, you should serve others and help them, first we have to train them in and teach them what are the actual principles of existence. If you say, well, just serve mankind, and oh, well, what are you going to do to serve mankind? I'll open an abortion clinic. People don't. And they, oh, yeah, very good idea. They don't know what it is to help others. They don't know and they don't like. They're hypocritical. They don't like the real thing, yeah. Well, therefore we have to have our festivals also and give them a taste of the spiritual world. There's no doubt it's not easy. By any material means it's not possible to spread Krishna consciousness. We have to invoke the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is there, but we have to be strict followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and execute his will, and then the mercy will flow. Chanakya's Arthashastra, yeah, way ahead of, chronologically well ahead of Machiavelli, who's famous. If you say Machiavelli in the Western world, it means the scheming politician. But Chanakya's outlook was that although kings have to be cunning, that's required, but their aim is ultimately to benefit. You're cunning because you're dealing with cunning people. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada used to quote that, it's probably from Chanakya, was that Shate Shachamato Shachamat Acharet, something like that. You have to deal cunningly with crooks. So that's required. For a Kshatriya, truthfulness is not necessarily a good quality. In certain things, certainly. Yeah. His vow to protect the citizens. But in political dealings, you may not be always fully honest. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.